All right, and we always set up, you know, our super intern, Darnell, has been kind of keeping us on the pulse as we told Dougie Fisher, you know, boxing has become a part of our staple, and nobody in our group is probably more into the boxing scene than Darnell. So, you know, it's you know, he's been holding down the chair, but we want to give him the proper introduction for his segment. So here it is, Boxing Moments with Darnell.
All right, we had last week we had Danny Jacobs versus Sergey Derevyanchenko, and I would like to get Devon on this because I know we saw the fight, so we was texting back and forth during this fight. But I'll give my little brief kind of summary of what I saw in that fight. Sergey, he was fighting on the inside. He came to fight. He's a real tough guy, but Danny Jacobs was a little too versatile for him. He could fight on the inside a little bit. He could move around, stick his jab out. He was counter punching, and it was too many different kinds of too many different layers for Sergey to handle. And one thing I would think that Sergey would do a little better at 154 at junior middleweight instead of middleweight, because a lot of the top competition at 160 are going to be taller, longer guys. Like, you have Danny Jacobs at 6'1", Andrade is the same height, Charlo 6'1". And you being 5'9", you might not necessarily be able to get straight in on all these guys. You're going to take a lot of stuff. One thing I noticed, he tried to do that little Jack Dempsey shift, but Danny Jacobs, they've trained so much together. They've sparred over 300 rounds. So as soon as he would try to do that shift over and to throw the hook, he would just like pivot his feet, and then Jacobs would pivot at the same time and come right out the back door. Did you see the – I know you saw the fight, but I'm going to throw it to Devon right now.
Yeah, I scored at 115, 113. I think, you know, actually, no, I may have had it 114, 140.
You had a draw.
I had a draw on that one. But it could have been 115, 113. I thought, you know, these are two fighters who know each other. I think Sergey, like you said, was surprised me. He's quick. He was able, I think once he was able to kind of gauge the timing, but I think Jacobs put a lot of work in. There were some very close rounds where I think Jacobs down the stretch was going really well. I think when Jacobs fought in the middle of the ring and didn't get on the ropes, it was funny because I listened to – and Harold Letterman was talking about the fight, and he was saying, well, they're fighting mostly in the middle of the ring. I'm like, no, Harold, they spent half that round on the ropes. I don't know. Are we watching the same fight? Are you watching Jacobs from 2 years ago? I don't know what was going on. But it was a fight where – I think I could see more people having it for Jacobs. And I agree with you. I think he could probably, Sergey probably could do much better at 154, where, you know, he would have some size and some strength. He would be able to bully some people. But he's also got nice hands and nice feet. But, right, you know, you are looking at a little taller boxers. I think what he'll have to do is not follow as much, cut the ring off a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he was – I don't know if you felt – I felt like when he let the left hook go, he let the left hook go enough and to, like, really stabilize Jacobs in a way. And I think if he would have let the left hook go a little bit more, he would have controlled distance and switched it up. And I think that's something when he goes back and looks at the film, he's going to regret that he did not – a couple times he threw it and it set up good combinations, but that left hook would have definitely put Jacob in positions for him to come back with the right hand. And so against a fighter like Jacob at that level, you're talking about you can't miss those things, right? You got to deliver on them, hit them. You can't miss those things. You can afford to miss it on lesser fighters and regroup somewhere else. But when you don't do it against Jacob, it's the kind of thing that will cost you a round or two. And I just felt like he didn't throw that left hook enough to control where he wanted Jacobs to go.
But that's one common issue with a lot of the Eastern European fighters. One thing that they're schooled on, excluding the Lomachenko camp, Anatoly Lomachenko, the father of Vasil, he trains both Vasil Lomachenko and Usyk, so this doesn't apply to these guys. But most of the Eastern European guys are they're standard 1-2 fighters. They're going to hit you with the jab, follow with the two, and they're pretty much all straight punches. If you saw the Sergey Kovalev versus Andre Ward fight, it was the same thing. He doesn't throw any hooks. He doesn't have any like looping punches, and that often is the difference when they fight against American fighters and Mexican fighters with more of a punch variety.
Yes.
So what do you think about the state of the middleweight division?
I mean, you got a lot of fighters in the middleweight division. I mean, as we can see, I mean, you know, just from the conversation around Triple G, Canelo, there's a lot of fights to be made in that space. You know, I think a lot of it's going to come down to what extent the promoters want to make the fights. That's one of, you know, you got good camps, and I think probably it's the division that probably is about to steal the light, the shine away from the welterweight and some of the, you know, this is, we've had an era where there's been a lot of the smaller fighters who fought big and who've come up in weight have kind of owned, I would say, the past 5 or 6 years in a really good way. Now it feels like we're going back to those old days of Hagler and those guys with some of those welterweights were coming up and, you know, making that middleweight division kind of a hybrid of natural middleweights and then these welterweights who are coming up and who can fight with enough power at middleweight to make some really interesting fights. And I feel like we're moving into that kind of Hagler, Hearns, kind of Sugar Ray, where the potential big fights, when you're talking about, you know, the Errol Spence kind of guys, where these guys, where it's a weight thing, but it's really just a fight thing from anywhere from kind of bigger welterweight, super welterweight to middleweight to super middleweight, anybody, as Broner would say, anybody who wants some can get some. Is right in that one. That's what I like about the middleweight.
You know, AB. About boys. Okay. Where would you see Jacobs faring against the other guys? Like, who? I might just go one by one. Do you think Danny Jacobs can beat Canelo Alvarez?
Yeah, I mean, he showed well against Triple G. I think Danny Jacobs is going to be good against anyone because he has a variety of fighters. He can fight any style. And they call him the Miracle Man. They don't call him Miracle Man for any reason. He can fight any style, and he has power. So I give him a chance in there because it will be a good fight. It will be a real good fight. I mean, they're going to go at it. Especially the new Canelo, who learned so much from his Mayweather fight. I think, you know, Jacobs is good against anyone. Would he beat Canelo? I think Canelo's hand speed and power and some of the things that I think was missed by Sergey, Canelo's not going to miss.
Yeah.
You know, Canelo knows how to control that ring, and he's strong. So, but, you know, Danny Jacobs got a lot of heart, man.
What do you think about him and Andre? I know they're also friends.
Yeah.
And they said, well, Danny Jacobs flat out said he's not fighting Andre unless if it's a big unification fight because he said Andre Rozier, which is Danny Jacobs' coach, is I think he's like he said like his godfather or something like that. Or they're really close. They grew up. They knew each other since they were 14, 15 years old. So they said they're going to fight for the big money, and if it's the big money's not there, they're going to wait. So how do you think Danny Jacobs would do against Charlo, actually?
That one, boy, that'd be a battle. That'd be one fight where it might just be fought in the middle of the ring. see who catch him. That's a lot of power and that's going to be a high-skill fight. And on the strength, I might get Charlo a little bit, but Danny's strong too. You know, he's such a pick-em because he's a hard guy to pick against, but I think Charlo has a motor. Yeah. Whereas Danny Jacobs takes – it feels like Charlo has a motor where he's busier longer. How do you feel? I mean, Charlo just feel like he's busier and his rate feels like it's more consistently high where he might have a higher volume put out. But, you know, you don't know how Jacobs might control that with distance because he's really good with making people fight the fight he wants to.
But that's one thing I see with in this matchup is Danny Jacobs he a lot of times he leaves himself open. Like when he's throwing a lot of those big looping shots and stuff like that. And if when you're fighting a guy like Charlo has an excellent jab. He has an excellent powerful jab. He knocked down J-Rock. He actually knocked down J-Rock with a jab. He knocked down somebody else with a jab, I saw. And he has a very strong right, straight right hand. And one thing I noticed about Danny Jacobs also is although he is versatile, he can fight inside, outside. He can slip punches out of the Philly shell. I saw he showed that in his last fight. But one thing with Danny Jacobs is he's not necessarily fluid with it. He's not seamless with his transitions. Like with Danny Jacobs, he's either on offense or he's on defense. He's not like Floyd Mayweather. Most people are not like Floyd Mayweather or guys like Terrence Crawford, Alvarez, where they're on offense. You can slip a punch and come right back. You know, in the pocket. Their game is seamless. I think Andre does that pretty well as well. But one thing like that is Charlo. We already mentioned his motor. I think Charlo he's more of a dog. Like Charlo we know Charlo is a dog. And I don't know if – I don't want to say Jacobs isn't a dog, but I think Charlo has a bigger dog inside of him. So when he's going to put pressure on Danny Jacobs and he's going to make him go backwards. And when Jacobs going backwards, he's strictly focusing on defense. And that'll cost him.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good analysis.
The World Boxing Super Series. We saw Regis Progray out – advance. He completely outboxed Terry Flanagan. I thought he was gonna win. Look, did you see the fight?
I didn't see this fight, so you might have to break this one down a little bit more for me.
Yeah, man, Regis Progray.
This is your boxing nerdology coming in.
He was born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana, and he was displaced by Hurricane Katrina. And he was displaced. He moved to Houston, Texas. He's been training there for pretty much his whole professional career. He's a real good fighter at 140. My pick for the World Boxing Super Series to win it all is Josh Taylor. He's a guy fighting out of the UK. He's kind of like I don't want to say it, but he reminds me of a white Terrence Crawford.
Like Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, man. That's the way he fights. He's a switch hitter. He can counter punch. I like his chances. But a lot of people picking Progray, and I can't knock that. That would be a good matchup. But I think that might wrap it up for the boxing moment this week. I'll throw it back to Devon.
But hey, this is as we say, we want to thank Darnell for doing the boxing moment with Darnell. I think it adds another element to our show. When we come back, we're going to move into the cycle.